Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
We're back.
Yay.
The journey continues.
To where? Yeah.
Well, I'm going on a journey.
Oh, yeah. We've got a few of them coming up, we were just saying, weren't we? We're all off out and about everywhere.
Yeah, I'm off to San Francisco for Oracle Open World. Yep. When's your first one?
So in a couple of weeks, I'm going to San Jose for the Net Events, sort of cloud data center analyst summit thing.
Yeah.
And then I'm off to France the following week, Paris, for the OVH.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so cloud conference.
Civilized.
Very ooh-la-la.
And you're off to Vegas, Claire?
Yeah, for Splunk.conf 2019. Going to visit my old friend Buttercup.
Cool. Who is Buttercup?
Buttercup the horse. Buttercup the horse is Splunk's mascot for the
.com.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I've been to Vegas a lot, trying to rack my brains. Like, what is the horse? Like, some of those hotels have a lot of crazy stuff in their lobbies, but a horse?
Yeah, they every time there's a Splunk.conf, they blow up a giant inflatable version of Buttercup and display it somewhere.
Okay.
You have to go find them.
You must get photos.
Yes, I will.
Good. Good, bring those back. So we've missed three podcasts.
Yeah.
Hmm.
No one's noticed.
I'm sure our loyal listeners have been wondering where we were. So top line today, what we're going to be talking about, Caroline, you're talking about cloud computing in financial services, where it's not used at all.
Well, you'll be surprised. That's always the general consensus, that they would never, or very... they wouldn't be keen adopters of it because it's a highly regulated industry, but shock horror, that is not the case.
Dun, dun, dun.
And earlier this week I went to a technology rebirthing centre run by HPE in Erskine. They give a new lease of life to old machines. And Claire, I guess you're knee deep in our own event.
Yeah, so I've been preparing for the Computer Weekly Mortimer Spinks Diversity and Inclusion event, which is on the 25th of September, so it's coming up, and I'm getting the anxiety.
But you've been talking to a charity about...
I've been talking to a charity called Astrid. They help people with chronic illnesses find flexible work in the tech industry. So I've been talking to one of the people that they helped to get a role when she kind of thought that, she wouldn't be able to work again.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, they've helped her out. They help a lot of people.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, look forward to hearing about that. We're going to begin, though, with you, Caroline. Cloud and banks and stuff.
Yeah, this is kind of on the back of a feature I've been working on accidentally for about 6 months, where I just ended up going to different conferences and maybe like sitting down with various end users in the financial services industry, talking to them a bit about cloud. And then kind of, this is interesting. And it's just because, like, basically I've been writing about cloud for 10 years as of November 2019. When I first started out, financial services was always held up as a industry that just wouldn't want to move to the cloud.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't feel comfortable outsourcing their IT and handing off responsibility of it to a third party provider for security reasons. And obviously it's a highly regulated industry and stuff like that. And then just the last couple of years, we've seen all these big kind of announcements from sort of high profile banks like Barclays saying, we're going all in on cloud nationwide. The Building Society, they've said the same thing. And then at the same time, you've got people like HSBC who've sort of said, we're pursuing a multi-cloud strategy. We're going to have bits of our infrastructure running in Google Cloud, we'll have some in Amazon. And it was just kind of like, hold on a minute, like 10 years ago everyone was saying you won't be doing this, why are you doing this, like stop what you're doing. Please
someone explain.
So I was trying to just get to the bottom. I was like, well, what has changed in those, I guess, 10 years that has made them change their stance on this? And why have they suddenly accelerated the progress they're making here quite quickly? I was talking to Carl Flinders, our financial services...
expert,
yes.
Guru, yes.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, it's really interesting. I was like, what do you think, why do you think in the last couple of years it's happened? He's like, it's been happening for years, long before that. He's like, it's just been under the radar. So I was like, shadow IT. I was digging into it a little bit more, and it seems there was this sort of turning point, 2016, when the Financial Conduct Authority published some guidance saying, right, if you want to use cloud, you're fine to do it as long as you meet, the ins and outs of this guidance. And that does seem to be, when you trace it back, that seems to have been like a having a bit of a sort of starter pistol effect on a lot of companies either going public with their cloud plans. But up to that point, it seems that a lot of firms were, like Carl said, were using cloud on quite a low level, low scale, kind of like we'll do little bits, but just maybe.
So was that a kind of policy change at the FCA then?
I think it was just like a rubber stamp saying it's okay to go as long as you, I say lots of things like you know where your data is being stored, or as long as all these caveats make you are fine to do it.
I suppose as well that there's a lot of competition with, you know, like new startup banks and financial services. Like apps, I'm saying things, I'm just throwing words out there that I don't know.
It's complete. Yeah, it is. Like, I know a lot of people sort of say, like, take the mick out of it.
Challenger banks.
Yeah, I know. Like, a lot of people sort of, oh, it's such a like, what's the word? Like, when you're at conferences and you're in the keynote and you just hear, I'm like, oh my God, like, old legacy companies being disrupted
by Uber,
Challenger. And that is exactly what's happening in financial services. And
it's real, man.
Yeah, so part of it is... So part of it is the guidance, but part of it is because they've got competition coming at them, and you know they have to change, and which is something I spoke to, I think, one of the DevOps engineers from HSBC. He sort of made the point that these challenger banks, they're not, you know, they're never going to compete with, say, HSBC on all fronts.
Yeah.
But they can go after, like, maybe a relatively small bit of your business, but it could be a huge revenue stream for them. And chip away at, like, say, it might be a challenger bank that only does current accounts, but maybe maybe they're using cloud, they're using AI, they're using chatbots, and just delivering like a much better customer service there, so they can, you know, maybe lure your customers over and chip away at that bit of your business. So so those businesses might be a little bit disrupted, sort of overall.
Yeah, I guess if you look at, for example, larger banks that you might take a loan out with, so you might have a savings account or a mortgage with a big traditional bank, but use something like Monzo for your current account that tells you where you're spending what and why, and it, you know, like, helps you with your day-to-day.
Yeah.
So you're effectively, you know, like, taking that part of your day, that part of your service elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because it's easier for you.
Mm. But yeah, that's the thing. You've got challenger banks that do all those kind of isolated bits like you mentioned there. So they might just do savings accounts. And if they're offering a better service than the bank you've always gone with, you might think, okay, well, I'll keep my mortgage here, but then I will use these guys just to get a better service, or, you know, or just a fancier change, or maybe they do better interest rates. Who knows? Whatever pulls you over, really.
Yeah.
You've got the regulatory landscape that is becoming more accommodating. They've got competition reasons for wanting to move as well. But as is always the case with financial services, the regulatory landscape is changing again and constantly. Mm. So I think what we've seen in recent years is these companies moving to cloud, but now I think they're going to have to maybe refine and revisit their cloud plans again. And this is something I'm writing on at the moment. There's new guidance coming out from the European Banking Authority.
Uh-huh.
Which basically is going to treat cloud as like any other kind of outsourcing.
Yeah.
So the guidance is actually guidance for banks on how to approach outsourcing, and cloud is part of that. It wants to protect banks from being too overexposed by only relying on like one provider, either in the cloud or just for any kind of outsourcing. So that if, say, that cloud provider goes down, if every bank in the UK is with AWS and it goes down, that's your whole banking system crippled, basically. Mm. So they want people to diversify their supplier mix. They want them to keep a register of who exactly you outsource stuff to, what are their disaster recovery kind of protocols, can you get to their data centres and like assess, you know, how securely they will store your data. If not, will they give you other kind of guarantees and stuff like that?
This is sounding like an opportunity for Oracle.
Really?
Is it now?
God. Well,
with their super secure infrastructure as a service, platform as a service stack.
Possibly.
Is this a sales pitch? I mean,
yeah. Okay. Are you on commission right now?
No, it looks like that, the sort of thing that they would latch onto.
There has been, because that is one of the things that's come out of like talking to people about this new guidance that's coming out. Like, so I went to AWS, I went to possibly Google, but a couple of others, and just said, oh, are you prepared for this? And a lot of them are like, well, we've already, you know, we add kind of terms and conditions to our customer engagements with financial services to make sure we're always compliant with regulation.
Mm.
So that's some, so the cloud companies are saying that, but some of the other not Oracle specific, because I haven't spoken to Oracle, but some of the kind of more legacy hardware vendors, when I've said that to them, they're like, well, it's fine, you know, we've always got, they've got the option with us to come back off premise and they don't have to worry about any of this guidance. So,
everything that you mentioned in the process of moving to the cloud just sounds like best practice to me anyway.
Yeah.
Make sure it's not going to go wrong and that your data's safe.
Yeah.
Is that not what they're meant to be doing?
Yeah,
anyway?
Well, you'd hope. But I think it's just, oh, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah. So loads of change as ever in that sort of going on at the minute. And it just feels like the last, probably in the 3 weeks since we've not been doing the podcast, I've just been putting my tanks on Carl's law and going, right, I'm writing about financial services, all right, bye, running away. So there's been lots of just stuff going on, I think, because let's say there's all those guidelines coming up, but also just more and more banks moving to the cloud and announcing plans, or organizations related to that sector talking about that stuff.
And is that part and parcel of also being more agile and so on?
Absolutely. That a lot of the banks we're talking to, this move to the cloud seems to go hand in hand with a kind of DevOps or sort of agile ways of working push as well, just because, like Claire alluded to, with the competition side of things, it's like you need to be working at the same pace as your competitors are able to do things, so a lot of them see sort of agile as a way of achieving that.
Cool, interesting, very interesting stuff. We often talk about the cloud as if it were some sort of magical, ethereal.
It's just
realm.
Someone else's computer.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's made up of machines. And this week, I went to visit a facility run by HPE where machines get a new lease of life.
Would that include us? Please.
Well, that might be my angle into this particular story. Anyway, this is HPE Financial Services, who've got two centres globally for refurbishing, upcycling. Mm. But also just recycling, like pulverizing and so on.
Oh, wow.
Machines, like when we have to give up our laptops, they go off somewhere, something happens to them, and this is one of the places where things happen to these old machines. But one of the interesting things about this place is it's in Erskine, which is near Glasgow, not that near Glasgow, but near Glasgow. But it used to be the manufacturing facility for Compaq back in the day. So in the 90s, when Compaq was making all its machines, its PCs, this was one of the places where that was done. And the guy at the HPE Technology Renewal Centre today in Erskine, he was working for Compaq then. So he's the operations manager at the site now.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a tour of the facility with us. So he's been working for 32 years. Either for Compaq, or then Compaq was acquired by HPE in 2002.
Like some kind of Wall-E type figure, you know, that he was at the centre when it was making things, and now he's there that it's breaking things down, and he's just, you know, like trying to make the environment better.
Exactly, because it is a big e-waste circular economy story. Jackie Rafferty, the guy's name is, and his colleague David Connell, he was also a Compaq veteran, so they've both been there for 30 odd years. And Jackie was saying that, well, they now have fewer people on site than they used to have when they were making the stuff, but they still have a fair few people there.
I thought you were going to say, but they have more fun now because they're smashing stuff.
Maybe they do. One of the employees is his son.
Oh, okay.
Jackie's son works at the facility as well. I just thought it was nice to see a kind of generational thing going on there, where they used to make these PCs, HP outsourced that elsewhere, but they use the facility for refurbing, for upcycling these other machines.
What does it look like? I'm kind of picturing like a scrapyard
for pictures.
PCs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the big magnet gets a car and throws it at someone and it gets crushed.
No, it's more... most of what they do is upcycling.
Okay.
Actually, 89% of the machines are then rejuvenated. They're sanitized, which is the word they use. So all the data is securely wiped.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, you know, like making it clean, which is what I would also be concerned about. You don't know how much dirt laptops collect. You use them every day. All of your skin's up in there.
Oh, they're doing that as well, Claire, because they're reselling these things, you see. They go into the wholesale market. They get put into nice HP boxes and they are sold, you know, as used machines. And it's not just laptops and desktops, but all the stuff that you know about, Caroline, and data centers, servers, etc., etc. Yeah,
Did you get to smash anything?
It's a massive thing. I didn't get to smash anything.
Oh, really? They didn't let you just take a sledgehammer to something?
They do pulverizing.
And push it off.
Oh, no, I'm helping.
No, they showed us some government stuff.
Oh.
Okay. Which has been pulverized.
Oh, okay.
Because it has to be super secure and no one will ever get the data ever again. And they do this thing called degaussing. I'm not quite sure what that is, but... It's really super secure, kind of wiping of the machines, etc. So, yeah. Interesting.
They should open one of those bars. You know, like the... I can't remember what the bar's called. But there are places that you can go where literally you go in, you put some goggles on, and you just smash it up.
Isn't that just a normal night out?
It's a normal
Friday
night out
for me. In the Woodford. Yeah, it's quite a nice story. Obviously, sustainability and all that kind of stuff is a big topic of conversation.
Big circular economy, etc. Yeah,
and particularly from the data center perspective.
And they've recycled the people too.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming back to your point.
Repurposed.
Yeah.
Anyway, they were super hospitable and very nice, and it was a very enjoyable tour.
Cool.
I think originally it was supposed to be your tour, Caroline.
Well, it was originally supposed to be Cliff's as well, but he went off to Cloud Foundry this week, and then I committed to going to.
And I took it because it was an opportunity to go back to the motherland.
Cool. Yeah.
And they also took us to a distillery in the evening.
Oh, nice.
Glengoyne. Glen meaning valley, Goyne meaning geese, because there's a lot of geese around the area.
Geese Valley.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see any geese?
I did not see any geese.
What?
No, but I was very focused on the distilling process.
Did you get mashed?
I did not personally get mashed, no. I tell you, it's quite poggy though, these places.
Fermenting stuff, isn't it?
But for anyone who's a fan of Still Game, I found out that, you know the episode of Still Game where they go to a distillery and get hammered? It was filmed in this distillery.
Oh, cool.
But you didn't follow suit?
Cool. No.
You didn't get mashed up?
On this occasion, no.
Yeah.
Well, having said that, who am I to say? Because we did have quite a lot of whiskey.
Yeah.
During the meal.
Oh, okay.
So it was quite good fun.
Good.
To be back home for a wee bit and seeing these guys gainfully employed, which is really good. And I'm off to Oracle Open World, as I said at the beginning. Just flag up a few things about that. Just coming back to the Oracle Cloud thing.
Yeah.
Inevitably, Larry Ellison will once again be attacking AWS and promoting Oracle's infrastructure as a service that lies beneath their platform as a service, that lies beneath their software as a service. They're saying they do the whole stack, so that's their great advantage, and they're super secure and much cheaper than AWS, etc., etc. So they'll be saying all of that. Missing this year will be Mark Hurd,
co-CEO
of Oracle, because he's not well. He's taking a leave of absence due to health issues. So it'll be interesting to see, because he's normally a very big presence. Oracle Open World.
So does that mean there'll be more Larry?
More Larry, more Safra Cats as well. IaaS play there. Autonomous database will be a big thing. What is the autonomous database? We ask ourselves and have been asking ourselves for 3 years. It's basically Oracle's database provided over its cloud infrastructure.
Okay.
It's basically what it is. And by virtue of that, you can take advantage of magical machine learning stuff, so self-healing and all the rest of it. And Larry says it's the most popular product in Oracle's history. He's very entertaining, actually. And he's still the richest billionaire in Silicon Valley.
Oh,
still ahead of Zuckerberg and the Google boys.
Google boys. Sound like the Bash Street Kid.
$48.2 billion he was worth in 2016.
Is he giving any of it to charity?
Is that all?
He does do that. Yes, I couldn't vouch.
How
sure? Not very.
Yeah. That's like, what do you even do with that amount of money?
Invests in racing boats, doesn't he?
Racing boats.
Yeah, because Brian Glick
Jets as well.
Brian Glick just came back from trip to the Isle of Wight where, like, with Oracle.
They were racing something.
But I think that was, it's also kitted out, I think, with like Oracle technology. So they can, you know, do all the data points and let's improve performance, data analysis, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Wasn't the thing a few years ago, Oracle Open World. Larry Ellison didn't do the keynote because he decided he wanted to go and watch the America's Cup or something.
He is Gavin Belson, isn't he, from Silicon Valley. I mean, that should be entertaining as usual. So that event, but we do have our own event coming up. Claire, you chilled about this?
She looks very chilled. I can see the knots in your back right now.
I know. So we've got, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, our event coming up on the 25th of September.
And isn't it 150 of London's... 150 women in tech all convening on London for one night only.
So basically this year's theme is embracing diversity and inclusion to make tech the best place to work. So we're talking about how we can make technology and the industry reflect all of the customers that it serves. Because mm-hmm. obviously technology is everywhere, everyone uses it.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure that the same everyone are developing it as well. So we just talk about, you know, like any kind of diversity and inclusion themes each year. And then in the evening we announce whoever won the top 50 women UK IT list.
Who was it last year?
Amali De Alwis, who was the CEO of Code First Girls at the time. Now she works at Microsoft. I've been running around trying to get speakers and panellists for that. It's like herding cats a little bit.
I suppose you're doing it over the summer and everyone disappears off on holiday as well.
Yeah, everyone's been away. But I'm really excited. I think it will be really good. So we're holding it in partnership with Mortimer Spinks, and our sponsor this year is the Wellcome Trust.
Mm-hmm.
So they do lots of, you know, like scientific investment and research. They're surrendering part of their building to us for the day, which will be really good.
Cool. It's all building up nicely.
Yeah, I think so. So we've got four keynote speakers announced at the minute, which is all of them. We've got all of the keynote speakers announced at the minute.
So who are they?
So we've got Debbie Forster, who's the CEO of Tech Talent Charter. We've got Jeff Thompson, who's the founder and executive chair of the Youth Charter. So then we have Suki Fuller, the founder and analytical storyteller at Miri Brewer. Dawn Dehaney, product manager at the Data Labs at Wellcome Trust as well. So those are the four keynote speakers.
Mm.
There's two panels, there's three workshops. It's going to be a day of learning. It's going to be great.
Cool. And you were saying at the top of the podcast that you had a meeting with Astrid.
Along the theme of diversity and inclusion, I was talking to a charity called Astrid.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they connect companies with workers who have chronic illnesses who need a more flexible approach to working.
Mm-hmm.
So after I spoke to the charity, they said they would connect me with some of the people who they had helped to get jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently spoke to a lady called Victoria Clutton. So she's a SharePoint coordinator at a firm called Ultran UK, which is a role that she got through working with Astrid. So Victoria has ME, chronic fatigue syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that... her energy levels fluctuate dramatically through the day, and any kind of level of activity can mean a massive amount of like rest time is needed.
Mm.
Very unusual for people with chronic fatigue syndrome to actually recover and get fully better. Mm. Like sometimes they just don't. They just don't get better. And Victoria said that she was somewhere in the middle, so not to the point where, you know, like she's bedbound or has to use a wheelchair or anything like that, but also not to the point where, you know, like she can work a full week and then recover over the weekend. She needs to manage her day, and quite often people with chronic fatigue syndrome are prescribed with kind of like a schedule. So you have to make sure that, you know, like you have an equal amount of like rest and work, and that you try and do a little bit of exercise if you can. So when she was when she first found out that she had it, she wasn't entirely sure whether she would ever be able to work. And there was a bit of a debate with the job centre over what she could and couldn't achieve.
Yeah.
And if, you know, like if she wanted to go self-employed and maybe, you know, like make stuff to sell on Etsy, for example, you still have to work a minimum number of hours a week, which she couldn't manage. And then if you're not paid within a certain amount of time, then the job centre doesn't actually see it as work for that period of time. I think she got offered a role doing work over the internet for a company in India, but it was below minimum wage.
Okay, yeah.
And then the job centre basically said to her, oh, well, why don't you take the job? And then we'll tell you afterwards whether or not it's illegal and we'll prosecute you. And she was like, no.
Yeah.
So, yeah, eventually she came across Astrid and they helped her to get this role as SharePoint coordinator for Ultran. It's a really flexible role. Her boss is... I think she said bosses. Yeah, I think that, you know, she reports into two people. They're really cool about it. She said that quite often it's projects that companies want to get done, but it's not the most important thing. So it sort of like falls by the wayside. And it's sort of like a want to have rather than a need to have. So this is a project that's getting done within Ultran that, you know, like she can work at her own pace and work when she needs to. And yeah, fit that into her schedule. Which is like really positive.
Yeah, definitely.
But they cater to all kinds of people. So chronic illness, it could mean something like chronic fatigue syndrome like Victoria, or it could mean, you know, like someone with cancer who's going through chemotherapy who needs flexible working because, you know, when you have a round of chemo, it can make you feel like really sick. You need to recover, but then you do have periods of time where you're okay.
Yeah.
And some of the other illnesses that they mentioned, you know, like asthma, anything that is sort of like an ongoing medical condition that could affect your ability to work full time.
Because that's it, you don't want to ever be, I think, as a person sort of defined by your illness, but then being told, like, oh, you can't work because of this means, oh, okay, so that's all I have then is the fact that I'm an ill person. So, yeah, getting back into the workforce must be quite like a morale booster, I guess, for that person individually as well, just like knowing that, okay, I can contribute still, like, I'm much more than just... Yeah, what's wrong with me?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, empowering. I mean, really empowering. And good all round, because it means that the talent that these people have is actually being productively channeled.
Yeah, exactly. So Astrid called them the invisible workforce. And I think technology really lends itself to stuff like this.
Yeah.
You know, you can work remotely. You don't always have to work around normal working hours.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's not like we're 19th century factory hands that we have to be.
So I thought that was really positive. I'm going to see if I can talk to some more people that have found roles through Astrid as well. I think that would be really cool.
Cool. And you're writing that profile up?
Yeah. So I've been a bit delayed because of some of the organising of the D&I event, but I'm hoping to get it up next week.
It's I just meant from the readers. From the point
readers,
of view.
It will be there at some point in the future.
No pressure.
No.
Maybe it will take like 4 months, like my interview with old Alex de Pledge.
Yeah, it was
well,
worth the wait.
I've still not written up my visit to the Erskine Centre. That should be on the site fairly soon, as soon as I can pull that together properly.
Nice.
So next week, Claire, probably you're going to be hyper busy again with the build up to the event.
Yeah. So it's less than 2 weeks now, and this is always my busiest time.
So we'll have another podcast between now and then. And next week I'll be in the tech capital of the world, the Bay Area. Caroline, where are you next week?
I am in the second tech capital of the world.
Berlin?
Shoreditch. I'm in the office. I'm mainly office bound next week. It's lots of events in London at the minute, because obviously it's that time of year, just that everyone's launching everything, there's no events during the summer. Everyone's like, hey, we're booking that round table we were talking about. No,
like, stop.
Yeah, so just lots of out and about next week in and around London, cloud decks, and you know, the drill, that stuff.
We're all going to be very busy in the lead up to
Christmas,
the end of
pretty
the year.
Much. Yeah.
Christmas,
oh,
yeah.
It's not even that far away.
No. I've got, I think, 1 week during the whole of October where I'm around in the office in London, that's it.
You poor thing.
And then November, the same.
See you in December.
Well, that's when AWS reInvent is, so I'll see you mid-December.
Should we get drinks in 2020?
If I've got time.
So we've got a bit of a lull before the storm. but not much of a lull.
No.
And that's all we've got time for this week. Just remains for me to say thank you to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you to you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.